I'm Marty Moscoe. Welcome to Radio Times. Some books can be read over and over, each time finding something new and meaningful. For Salamisha Tillett, it's Alice Walker's Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Color Purple, that she first read when she was 15 years old. It's a powerful story of three black women, Celie, Shug, and Sophia, living in rural Georgia in the early 20th century while confronting domestic violence, sexual violence, and racial oppression. Told by Celie, it's also about her sexual awakening and a sisterhood that helped her free herself from her husband's abuse. Salamisha Tillett's new book, In Search of the Color Purple, is about her personal experience with the novel as a rape and sexual assault survivor, her conversations with Walker about writing the book, the Spielberg movie, the Tony Award-winning adaptation, and the hostility Walker has faced, especially from black men, for her portrayal of male characters. Salamisha Tillett is a professor of African American Studies and Creative Writing at Rutgers University at their Newark campus. She's also co-founder of the nonprofit A Long Way Home with her sister to end violence against girls and women. Salamisha Tillett, it's been a little while. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. Take us back to your 15-year-old teenage girl self and your first reading of The Color Purple. What was your reaction?
Well, my cousin's girlfriend, and they've been partnered now for, I guess, 25-plus years, she gave it to me during the summer of 1991, right before my senior year of high school. And she gave me three books to read. One was The Color Purple. The second was Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye. And the third was the autobiography of Malcolm X, written by Alex Haley. And so the constellation of those three books literally changed the trajectory of my life and also gave me a vocabulary and, I guess, a history to understand racial and gender oppression in the United States. But The Color Purple in particular was just such a wonderful text because I discovered a new language and a new world through Celie's perspective that I had never seen before.
I remember I was quite a bit older than you, Salamisha Tillett, when that book came out. I too read it, and obviously as an older white woman probably had a very different experience with the novel, but I do remember carrying that book around me, and I literally could not put it down.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's, I think, so marvelous about the story that Alice Walker gave us in The Color Purple, because I think the intervention in terms of, you know, readers of American literature, to have a story told through the point of view of Celie, a 14-year-old African-American girl who's growing up in the segregated South, who's a sexual assault survivor, is a really rare character and much less an even rarer narrator of her own story. But what I think Alice Walker was able to do was to get us to understand not only Celie's perspective, but to invite all of us into her world, like you or me. None of us were Celie, right? Like none of us were that age in that moment. But she was able to tell such a lively and also harrowing tale of injustice, but also perseverance, that I think so many of us were able to find ourselves in that world and cheer for Celie and her family at the same time.
And it was written almost 40 years ago. And as you mentioned, Salamisha, really groundbreaking in many ways, the perspective, Celie telling her own story. It deals with sex in a sort of intimate and very sort of body-centric way. I mean, abusive sex, but also loving sex. And of course, the violence.
Yeah, and what's interesting, because you were talking about when you first read it, and then for me, I read it literally 30 years ago, right? So so much has changed in our culture and the way in which we understand these issues. And a lot of it has to do with the brave feminist writers of the 70s and 80s, of which Alice Walker is one of them, in terms of not only, like you pointed out, the sexual abuse that Celie experiences at a very young age, and she's impregnated twice by a man she thinks is her father. The children are taken away from her. And then she enters this marriage that she doesn't want to be part of with Albert, who abuses her physically. So we have those themes that are being organized around and told in personal and public ways in the 70s and 80s. And then what Alice Walker also gives us is this character, Shug, who at the time would be seen as a bisexual woman. Celie would be seen as lesbian. And now we have a wider vocabulary to describe their sexuality and their intimacy. But at the time, to see these two women in print and then eventually on the big screen, and their loving relationship and their healing relationship with each other, was really radical. So not only do you have sexual abuse on one hand, but you have a real full exploration of the possibilities of women's sexuality in their dynamic. And that was really, really radical, and also quite a point of contention for many, many people.
I reread it very quickly in preparation for today's interview, and the scenes where Celie with Shug is exploring her body. I mean, she does not know her body. She has to sort of cut it off in order to endure the abuse that she has had to endure. And so her discovery of her own body is it's very body centric.
Yeah. No, I hadn't thought of it that way. So I love the way that you're noting that it was such a sensual and such a tender but also very focused exploration of Celie's body on her own terms, but also through through Shug's loving hands and loving loving body herself. And so I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's definitely true, that you get to see Celie discovering her sexuality, but also discovering her body and what parts of her body can be animated to increase her pleasure. It's so wonderful. And part of it's interesting because, you know, how do you put that on to the big screen? And then how do you tell that on stage? I mean, the adaptations take that scene and do very different things with it. But I think in the novel is where you get the clearest exploration of Celie's beauty and her discovering of her own beauty on her own terms.
You begin your book, you're at Alice Walker's house, which has this incredible view. It's in California. And, you know, here you are interviewing someone who, and this book has meant so much to you. And that can be kind of intimidating to try to, you know, sit down with someone that you respect, maybe even love so much. What did you want to know from her?
I had no idea. I mean, like I talk about in the book, because I had grown up reading Alice Walker and then became a professor and taught so much of her work. And, you know, you read interviews and you watch documentaries with the person, you don't really know what they're going to be like in the flesh, so to speak. And so part of my curiosity was, what would Alice Walker actually have to say about The Color Purple after so many years, so many interviews, so much writing that she's done on her own, and also a reticence that she has with the media. So all of that was in the back of my mind. And fortunately, she had a collection of poetry coming out called, I think it's called Arrow in the Heart. And so I went to do a 2-day interview. The first day was to interview her about her recent poetry collection, and the second day was about The Color Purple. So I think, like you, and I was prepared to be a journalist. And many of the conversations we had that first day about her poetry collection had that kind of, it was less intimate. And then over the course of being able to understand where she was coming from, because that poetry collection has some poems about Celie and also poems about her daughter. So it allowed me to create a sense of familiarity with her, which I think enabled her to feel comfortable with me the next day to talk about The Color Purple. And as I write in the book, I'm trying to set up the next day. And so I ask her about The Color Purple, and she says, "What else is there to say?" And can you imagine? I'm like bursting out. I'm like, "Wait, this is the whole part of the trip. Like, this is the
That's
whole."
That's why I'm here, right?
Yeah, I'm like, "I love your poetry collection, but I'm really here about The Color Purple." And so she seemed so exhausted and tired. But when I was able to interview her the next day, and I'll just tell the story very quickly, she started crying when she thought about her grandmother, who Celie's based on, her grandmother Rachel Little. And that was so moving to me, because I was like, wow, all these years, right? All these years, all these stories that you've been able to tell and reclaim your grandmother's life, her pain that she suffered is still so close to Alice. And that was really moving to me.
You also describe Alice Walker as the, quote, freest Black woman you had ever met.
Yeah, and I think this goes back to what you're talking about, like that body-centric description of Celie's coming of age and coming to her sexuality. I think Alice Walker, to be able to create Suge on some level, to create this otherworldly, highly confident figure in a blues woman in the figure of Suge, I think there's a lot of ways in which Alice Walker has either earned the confidence to care less in some ways of what others think. But also, I was there, I was all anxious, right? So in contrast to me, she just seemed so free. And then what was fascinating was that she literally lives on 40 acres of land. And originally she bought 20, and then later on she bought the other 20. And that was just fascinating, just for her to live, and that's referencing the 40 acres and a mule, of course, that post-slavery that African-Americans sought as reparations for slavery. So there were all these ways in which I thought, wow, she seems so comfortable in her skin, and she's earned that right. She didn't always feel that way, and she definitely didn't feel that way during the writing of The Color Purple and the backlash that ensued. But now she seems quite confident and comfortable in who she is, and that was just amazing for me to see and to witness in person.
You teach creative writing. The very first sentence of The Color Purple is, you better never tell nobody but God. It'd kill your mammy. And then she goes on to say to God, dear God, I'm 14 years old. I've always been a good girl. Maybe you can give me a sign letting me know what is happening to me. As a writer, I mean, you need that first couple of sentences to hold the reader.
Yeah, and those are when I read it, you're like, what is going to happen in this book?
Yeah.
And on a number of levels, I think it's such an unforgettable opening because one, just the syntax, right? Like that you point out that we're in this moment in which the Southern Black girl is telling her story and Alice Walker is trying to get us as close to the rhythm of that language as possible. Alice said that she wanted to write a book that her mother would be able to read, her mother from Eatonton, Georgia. And that's also why she did the film eventually. But to be able to, this is the first novel that we have in which we have that language, that the richness and the flexibility and the fluidity of Black Southern vernacular speech as the primary language of the novel. The other thing that's really interesting is the epistolary format, the letters written back and forth between Celia and God, Celia and Nettie, and then eventually Celia and all of nature, all of God that's in everything. And that's also, this is the first African-American novel to have that format. So there's all these ways in which, on just a level, like what we would say is a formal experimentation, it was pretty groundbreaking. And as someone who had traced Alice Walker's writing up until that point, I could see the signs of that happening, but I still was unprepared for how much that experimentation would become the basis of the novel. And I think that's in many ways why she won the Pulitzer that year and the National Book Award, both in 1983, the year after the book came out.
Let me pick up on that after this very short break. That's Selamisha Tillich. She's got a new book. It's called In Search of the Color Purple, The Story of an American Masterpiece. We're going to talk more after this short break. We've also got clips from the movie. Stay with us.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with Selamisha Tillich about her new book. It's called In Search of the Color Purple, The Story of an American Masterpiece. She's a professor at Rutgers University teaching African-American and African studies, also creative writing. And she co-founded with her sister an organization called A Long Walk Home to empower young people to end violence against girls and women. There certainly is violence in The Color Purple, Alice Walker's novel, written almost 40 years ago. There is redemption as well. And you can join us, especially if you have read the book or perhaps saw the movie or the play. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. So, Misha, let me pick up on what you were saying about the language, the syntax, the way that Seeley speaks in this novel. And you write that in 1981, Alice Walker sent an excerpt of The Color Purple to Essence. They wrote her back a very cryptic response. Dear Miss Walker, Black people don't talk like that. Help us understand the controversy that was certainly around the language of this novel.
Yeah, thank you. So one of the reasons why Alice Walker originally sent the excerpt to Essence is because they had been so supportive of her writing in the past and had, published earlier pieces. And so I think the assumption or the expectation was, of course, this is a book about Black women, it portrays their suffering, but also portrays their healing and their awakening. And so it would be a good fit for Essence. And what she was surprised by, I think, was the immediate rejection of her book. And so one of the things that I talked about earlier was the intervention and the innovation of her book was to center the voice of a Southern Black girl as the narrator of this story. But to do so then meant that Alice Walker was also challenging what we think of as, the third person omniscient narrator, a particular standard English that people value over other forms of Southern vernacular, Black Southern vernacular speech. And so what Alice Walker was very, very sensitive to and aware of were earlier controversies with Zora Neale Hurston's Their Eyes Were Watching God. And so Zora Neale Hurston, and I think now that book is so celebrated and it seems impossible that Zora Neale Hurston was anything but an iconic figure. But when Zora Neale Hurston publishes that book, even though most of it's told through the point of view of a third person omniscient narrator, in the middle of the book, there's a break. And Janie, the Southern heroine of that book, her consciousness kind of takes over. And so the book we celebrate now not only shows the diversity and fluidity, again, of Black vernacular speech through things like the dozens and the folk tales that are throughout that novel, but also it also became a way of Janie's own awakening, her own consciousness becoming the dominant part of the story. So Alice Walker, though, in the 1970s, discovers Zora Neale Hurston at a time when no one's reading Zora Neale Hurston, and many people feel like she was in fact writing in minstrel talk. Richard Wright famously has a very harsh book review of her work, and he says that she's as close to minstrelsy as possible, right? So to think of Their Eyes Were Watching God as a minstrel text, because it did try to capture the vitality of the people that Hurston grew up around, was also highly criticized then. So there's a way in which the way that African Americans speak when it's not the dominant language or standard English, it's always been a kind of controversy within schools, within our culture, and then within literary practices. And so there was a risk, I think, that Essence editors felt that she was somehow mocking or engaging in a caricature of how Black people speak, as opposed to doing a novel that reflected, our assimilation into American society.
This book is very personal to you, as I mentioned, introducing you to the show. And as we know, Celie has been, she's raped by her, she thinks it's her father, but nonetheless is raped, gets pregnant twice, loses, the children are given away. She's abused by her husband. And as you have also written and talked about, you were the victim of a rape. This is while you were a freshman at the University of Pennsylvania, was actually a member of an African-American fraternity. Later, you were sexually assaulted. You were in Kenya. And I ask you this because you write about it and you have talked about it. How did The Color Purple help you deal with the aftermath, the consequences of what had happened to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I find so fascinating about the novel, in addition to like all the formal experimentation that I just talked about, was that you can see in this entire kind of plot Celie go from being a traumatized victim to an empowered woman. And that's pretty hard to kind of trace in any story, much less a novel that is doing so many other things at once. And I think, you know, I read the novel before I was sexually assaulted, and then I returned back to the novel throughout my life and my journey of healing. And one of the things that Alice Walker, back to that first line that you gave us, one of the things that she really wanted to do was immediately put us in the perspective of Celie. She didn't want any competing points of view. She didn't want Pa's story to become the dominant way we understand Celie's sexual assault. And I think that moment, that decision she makes to center the voices of survivors, in fact, liberated me when I became a victim of sexual assault myself. Because it's an unapologetic, unfiltered exploration of Celie's pain, and also a really generous attempt to tell her story of growth and compassion for others. And so, you know, I'm going through my own journey in Philadelphia, sure, as you pointed out, trying to understand what has happened to me, trying to find a community of people to help me heal. And that became many ways a lifeline for me. And then when my sister and I started A Long Walk Home, this notion of sisterhood, which is also another major theme of The Color Purple, was really important to us because my sister helped me heal. And just to see the women that Celie had in her life, including her sister, help her heal. I mean, it is a mirror in many ways of my journey, but also it was an inspiration for my process.
Let me play a scene from the film, The Color Purple. Mm-hmm. Sophia is played by Oprah Winfrey. And here she is telling Celie, who's played by Whoopi Goldberg, that she won't take abuse from men, and it's not, she has gotten it from all sides, but let's give it a listen, and then we can talk about it.
All my life I had to fight. I had to fight my daddy, I had to fight my uncles, I had to fight my brothers. Girl child ain't safe in a family man's, but I ain't never thought I had to fight in my own house. I loves Hoppo. God knows I do. But I kill him dead before I let him beat me.
Now, we should say that's the first movie role that Oprah Winfrey ever had. And Selamisha, you say in this book that that was a first take. And we also know, as a result, I think, of this book and this movie, that Oprah Winfrey then later talks about the rape that she endured, what happened to her as a younger woman.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that is such an iconic scene from the movie, and one that's not only quoted in familial spaces, but actually reached what I think of as one of the anthems of Black Lives Matter, Kendrick Lamar's song, All Right. He literally quotes, "All my life I've had to fight," in this racial justice moment. Yeah, that was pretty astonishing. I never knew that Oprah did that in one take. And when I had the ability to interview her, the opportunity to interview her, she described the scene as a couple of things. One, Whoopi wasn't there, right? She's looking directly into the camera. And that it came from a place that was so familiar to her, because she too was a 15 or 14 year old Black girl in the South who was pregnant as a result of rape. And so when she first reads The Color Purple, she reads the New York Times review by Mel Watkins. She rushes to a local bookstore in Baltimore. She reads the book in its entirety as she stands in the bookstore. She buys every copy, and she starts sharing it with people on the street and on the subway. And then when she moves to Chicago, she continues to do so. So she became an early evangelist. You know, you could think about the Oprah a book club, but this was a version of that in her way back then.
Let me just quickly. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. So it just changed the course of her life. She would say that it, The Color Purple, not only did she see herself in Celie, but when she was cast as Sophia, it changed every other aspect of her life forever. And I was astonished by that, because I didn't realize how much The Color Purple was central to her trajectory.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Selamisha Tillett. She is a professor of African American Studies at Rutgers University in Newark, Northern New Jersey. And she's got a new book called In Search of the Color Purple, The Story of an American Masterpiece. And again, you can join our conversation. We're covering a lot of territory here, especially if this is a story that has resonated with you. either from the book or the play or the movie. And again, you can email us, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can give us a call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Salamisha, Alice Walker also faced a lot of criticism coming from from Spike Lee, from Ishmael Reed, from a number of really high-profile black men who really had objections to the portrayal of black men in this novel. What was the effect on her, on Alice Walker?
I think she was surprised quite. You know, it's the book. There was the growing criticism, and then the movie comes out, and the movie gets nominated for 11 Oscars. But that was really what galvanized a lot of the criticism, or a lot of the people who were giving critique. Not only was it, you know, talk shows, but it also, there were petitions, there were protests outside the movie theater, and there was a huge campaign to make sure that this movie didn't, you know, win an Oscar. An organization called the Coalition Against Black Exploitation was founded in response to the film. So, you know, part of the criticism, in a way, it wasn't completely arbitrary. This book and this movie comes out during the height of Reagan's backlash against African Americans. You have stereotypes about the welfare queen, as well as crack epidemic and the way in which the black community is seen as hyper violent and hyper dysfunctional. So those were the prevailing stereotypes. And also you have the long standing racist stereotype of black men as being hyper sexual and predatory rapists, a stereotype that was used to justify the racial lynching of black men and some women, but black men primarily at the turn of the 20th century. So that's all in the discourse. And very few films, you know, what was astonishing about The Color Purple, what was the hope of The Color Purple, and Quincy Jones is the producer of it, was to make an all-black cast film that was able to be received with the same kind of accolades and also attention that another film of the same kind of quality and with such a, you know, dynamic cast but was all white would have been received. And so there were a lot of ambitions for this film. And I think the ambitions for the film mixed with these old racial stereotypes and an anxiety on the part of some black people that this film was feeding into rather than liberating, feeding into racist caricatures as opposed to freeing or liberating black people from those was part of the drama. But also I think there's a sense that you're not supposed to air dirty laundry, right? And this is a, you know, something that happens, it's an in-group thing, that you're not supposed to tell what's happening in your home when you have to go out in public and have the best face forward to combat white supremacy. And so Alice Walker was trying to tell the stories of black people in the South, black women in the South who experienced suffering on many levels, and to tell that story honestly and to tell that story as she understood it to be for her family was to, in many ways, put a spotlight on these things you're not supposed to talk about.
I do want to play clip number three, which is Seeley, but let me just quote Spike Lee said that this was a film, is referring to the film The Color Purple, that was done with hate. Journalist Tony Brown called the film the most racist depiction of black men since The Birth of a Nation. Now, there was a white director, Spielberg, so I wonder whether that sort of fed into this, this real hostility to the film.
It definitely did. And what's interesting was that Quincy Jones is kind of taken out of it when you look at the criticism. And Danny Glover was also erased. And those are two people who gave a lot to this film and believed in the story of Seeley. What's also interesting, and this is just like stuff you find out when you're doing a book, Steven Spielberg, as we know him today, was not seen as a serious director at the time. He was most well known for, you know, Jaws, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and E.T. E.T. was his kind of film on the way to becoming serious. And so he was highly criticized in the mainstream, like Variety, the New York Times, for doing this film. And they thought he was kind of, how do I say that? He was just, you know, he was doing too much. He was too ambitious, and he wasn't considered to be a serious director. And how dare he take on this project? So there's so many criticisms of this film that some seem so crazy now. But at the time, I think this was the mix, and this is how people saw it.
Well, let's play another clip, and this is the clip from the movie The Color Purple. Celie, played by Whoopi Goldberg, stands up to Mr. Also Albert, also her husband, after years of abuse, played by Danny Glover. She's jumping up from the table, holding a knife to his throat.
Until you do right by me, everything you think about is gonna crumble.
Don't do it, Miss Celie. Don't trade places with what I've been through.
Come on, Missy. Let's go to the car.
He ain't worth it. He ain't worth it.
Who you think you Let's is? Go. You can't curse nobody. Look at you. You're black, you're poor, you're ugly, you're a woman, you're nothing at all.
Do you do right by me? Everything you even think about gonna fail.
Very powerful scene there, Salamisha Tillett. And Danny Glover's portrayal, and we're almost up at a break here, and I do want to talk a little bit more about that, but just a quick response to that scene as we listen to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I hear that scene, I find that to be such a moment. That's Celie's moment of finding her voice fully. And after that, Albert then becomes the character whose journey of redemption and atonement is the one that we should be watching.
We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Salamisha Tillett. In Search of the Color Purple is her new book, subtitled The Story of an American Masterpiece. Much more after this short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. And if you're just joining us, I'm talking about the book, the movie, we'll probably get to the play of The Color Purple, written by Alice Walker almost 40 years ago, won a Pulitzer Prize, the National Book Award, made into a movie, and also a musical on Broadway. Also reviled and criticized for a number of reasons as well. Salamisha Tillett's book is In Search of the Color Purple, The Story of an American Masterpiece. Well, talking about Albert, or Mr., as Celie calls him, and this is the man that she is married to in The Color Purple. You had a really, really provocative piece in the New York Times, Salamisha Tillett, Can an Abuser Make Amends? The Color Purple Points the Way. This is a book that you have read many, many times, and you say, as a middle-aged woman, you're drawn to Albert and perhaps see him in a different light than you did perhaps as a younger person reading The Color Purple. And then you ask, how does one actually atone for violence they inflict on others? And you say that really Albert, Mr., he helps show us the way. How so?
Yeah, I wrote that piece obviously after the book is written, and also during a period in which we as a country were really wrestling with the insurrection at the state, the U.S. Capitol. And there were all these, in the immediate days and weeks afterwards, there was this quick, compulsion almost to have forgiveness on the part of certain legislators, right? There was this, can we get over it? Can we get past this moment? It wasn't that bad. And there's that. And then also we're continuing to be in the age of Me Too. And there's also this kind of, what are we going to do with these people who have harmed others? So I'm writing that's the backdrop. And right. I find The Color Purple, and I find Albert to be such a singular figure. I find his attempt, as you point out with the scene we just listened to, when Celie puts the curse on him. I mean, that is a turning point for Albert in all versions of the story, the movie, the musical, and the novel. But I also found that in the musical, because we can see his complete and utter breakdown on the stage with the music getting frenzy and the lights flickering on and off, that Albert loses a lot as a result of the harm he has inflicted on others. And so you can stay in that position. You can say that you can deny the harm. That's one choice. You can try to move past it and reinvent yourself as if you've never done that harm. That's another choice. Or you can try to atone for the harm that you've inflicted by owning it, and then by changing your life, and then by repairing the damage that was done. And so he's such an extraordinary figure for me in that way, as a survivor myself, but also as all of us have been witnesses to other forms of violence in our culture recently. And so I thought, what an extraordinary gift to give us, and what a different way of reading Albert as a result of Me Too. I think that's the biggest difference for me. I don't know if we didn't have this moment in which so many people came forward with their allegations of sexual harassment and sexual assault, and other people have been held accountable for that, I wouldn't have seen Albert the way I do now. I probably would still be focusing on Celie, and not seeing the potential in Albert. And I think I've grown and changed as a result of Me Too, as well.
Well, in fact, you write near the end of this book, "I've long fantasized about the moment when the men who raped me asked me for my forgiveness." You go on to say, "Their long overdue confession delivered, and somehow my closure is complete." This is your kind of make-believe scenario of their apology. And then you write, "The reality, however, is that like most rape survivors, I will never have such an opportunity." But does Albert, does Mister's recognition help you sort of heal from what happened to you?
Yeah, that's a really, really powerful question. I think that I still am, like, the way I was in search for The Color Purple, I probably am in search of that kind of forgiveness still. I think my process has been primarily kind of self-forgiveness. A lot of rape victims experience severe forms of shame and self-blame. And I think that's been my process. But I do hold Albert kind of out there as an ideal of what one can be if they choose to make a difference. And then also in, political activist circles, restorative justice. I did a panel this summer for the Survivor Summit, which was led by Tarana Burke, the founder of Me Too. Sure. And I did a restorative justice panel. And it was really interesting with other rape survivors or legal advocates, who have been really trying to think through, what does restorative justice mean? One woman on the panel had gone through the restorative justice process with her perpetrator. And then after that, I've been thinking even more explicitly about how certain indigenous communities practice restorative justice in terms of sexual abuse and domestic violence. So I think that's the kind of logical outgrowth of Albert's path to redemption. What is the role of restorative justice in our community and in our nation when it comes to these forms of harm that are committed against people?
Let me make a weird segue, but I'm doing this only because you had a piece in the New York Times today about the interview that Oprah did with Meghan Markle, with Harry. I don't even know what Harry's last name is. Nonetheless.
Yeah.
And you write about Harry's kind of racial awakening that he didn't realize until he was living with Meghan Markle, about what racism looked like, what it felt like. Oprah asks her, which is an interesting question in light of The Color Purple, you know, were you silenced or were you silent? But can you make some kind of parallel, some segue between these two phenomena?
Yeah, and I think, thank you, earlier you pointed out that Oprah is the link between
she
my
is
book.
The link.
So I didn't make that connection, other than I've interviewed Oprah 4 times, and I must say, watching her on camera do that interview was exquisite, but also it reminded me of my first panic attack. I was nervous before I interviewed Alice Walker. I was extremely nervous before I interviewed Oprah Winfrey.
I get it.
But I think the Megan, I think there are, yes, the point that, you know, Megan, obviously, this idea of finding one's voice, and she compares it to, I think, the Little Mermaid character, Ariel, the princess who loses her voice. But what I was interested in, and I guess this is a tendency of mine as a writer, as much as I am interested in critiquing and showing how oppression works and how it impacts us as individuals and communities, I do think when people try to redeem themselves, it's important to point out those moments too. And so the same person who's interested in and writes about Albert, a fictional character's arc, is interested in seeing how Harry went from someone who wore a Nazi uniform or to a costume or party 15 years ago to someone who's left the monarchy in defiance of his family and in support of an anti-racist life. I mean, that's essentially what's happened. Now his new family, he marries Megan, he has a son and another child on the way. And so it's just amazing. Like, what is it that kind of awakening look like? What are the steps that make that possible? And because I'm a Black woman, I am interested, because you kind of want everyone who's in a position of privilege or power to, at least I do, undergo such a process in order to share a world in which we're all equal and all free. And it takes people in positions of privilege and power to try to undo their position of privilege and power. And it takes people like me to point out that and work together. So I think it's, you know, I'm interested in Albert's arc and I'm interested in Harry's arc, and one's real and one's fictional. But I think it's important to point that out as much as possible, because it shows us a different way of being.
I do want to play a clip of you interviewing Alice Walker, but let me just quote one thing from The Color Purple, which I think speaks to what you just said there, Salamisha. And this is Celie talking about Mr. or Albert. I mean, when you talk to him, now he really listened. And one time out of nowhere in the conversation us was having, he said, "Celie, I'm satisfied. This is the first time I ever live on Earth as a natural man."
Wow. It's good. I've heard that in a while. Yeah, it's powerful.
well, let me play a clip. This is you interviewing Alice Walker, and this is at Brooklyn Talks. It was an event in 2018, responding to an audience question asking about some of the rituals that Walker does before and after writing about trauma. Let's give that a listen.
You know, I find that, you know, I heal myself all the time through my work. Mm. You know, I mean, it's so wonderful to write something and then put on just some wonderful rocking music and just dance, you know, until I just feel completely free and silly and, you know, just fine. And dance, I think, is the closest I feel to what writing is.
Can you connect with that, Salamisha? Tell it.
Yeah, I haven't listened to that interview since we did it. So I was, immediately for me, and I end the book with the epilogue of there's a 75th birthday party that the town that Alice Walker is born in, Eatonton, hosts for her. And at the end of the party, not the end of the party, but the end of the big public talk that she does, it's a whole day, she invites the entire audience to go on stage with her and dance to Stevie Wonder, which, of course, is the opening of The Color Purple. She references a song of his. And I thought, this is back to the bodily centric descriptions that you pointed out, that I think for Walker, being present in her body is the writing and the dancing are synonymous with each other. I did an interview yesterday and someone asked me, what is it that I do for care? And I said running, right? And for me, I think that must be another way of, and I have a whole running community, it's many whom are listening to us now, based in Philly and based in New York, and Newark here in New Jersey. I think that's my way. So for Alice, I think it is the writing and the dancing. But I think the other big picture thing I would say is that what I got from The Color Purple is the role of art as a healer. And I think when I was in her presence, I could see that. I brought my sister Scheherazade, who's a photographer and a healer. And I think that I can look at, you know, someone like Albert and see the potential in him is because art has been my primary way of healing. In lieu of the law or legal justice, I think a lot of survivors have had to create their own way, and art oftentimes has become a stand-in for the justice we can't achieve in other ways.
That's pretty powerful. Do you see yourself continuing to read The Color Purple?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure.
Do you need it? I mean, is this a book you need to read?
No. Well, I don't, but maybe, because that's the whole thing. Every time I read it, I see something different. But I will continue to teach it, and I will continue to teach her. Yeah, you know, I think it'll be interesting. I have a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old. And so when they're of age, later when they're teenagers, I look forward to introducing this book to them. They've been part of this process, but they, of course, think it's like literally about the color purple, right? And they know who, you know, the name Alice Walker, but they don't know the story of Celie. And I look forward to bequeathing them that that legacy of her storytelling and my own journey and what this book has meant to me. And it will mean something very different to them, which I hope, I hope it's intimate, but I hope it doesn't have the same level. I hope they are not traumatized the way I was and sure. Therefore have a different meaning of the story themselves.
We're almost out of time here. Did you see, you saw the play version of The Color Purple?
Yes, I first saw it in Philadelphia, actually. So I didn't get to see it when it ran on Broadway, which is a big regret. But at the time, I was like, I don't understand how this is going to be translated to the stage. And so, but now I've seen, the touring version. And then if you go to the Performing Arts Library here in New York, you can see the musicals that were performed on Broadway, the two different versions. You can see them for one viewing only. So that's their contract. But it was really amazing, especially the one that Jonathan Doyle did, the one that won the Tony. Extraordinary, and really brings the story to life in a different way. And now they're making it into a movie. So there's another life to The Color Purple. So I probably will read the book again to write about that.
Well, we got to leave it there. Salamisha Tillett, thank you for joining us. Her book is called In Search of the Color Purple. And we're going to close things out with the Tony-winning Cynthia Erivo performing I'm Here from the Broadway musical The Color Purple. That was Tony-winning Cynthia Erivo performing I'm Here from the Broadway musical The Color Purple, and that was at the 2017 Makers Conference in California. Salamisha Tillett's new book is titled In Search of the Color Purple, The Story of an American Masterpiece. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. Tomorrow on the show, we'll look at where voting rights stand following the 2020 election after the House of Representatives passed a bill safeguarding ballot access, and many state legislatures want to restrict it. Hope you can join us.